just wanted to start off the show that way. Make sure you people are paying attention. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Brad coming at you live from Dallas, Texas. That's right, AM 1360 Rational Radio here celebrating their last week on terrestrial radio. Unless we can do something about that between here and the end of the week. We're working on it. Any angels out there, we'll take it. I am your friendly citizen guest. What am I? Citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and this week, guest hosting for Mike Malloy, who's enjoying a well-deserved vacation here between the holidays. Wishing you all, by the way, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year coming up. We're going to try to, let's try to cheer you up here at the end of the decade. That's the least we can do. And, of course, that's why I bring up explosive diarrhea. But I'm not going to run with that. No, I'm not. Not this hour. Don't look at me that way, Tez. We'll talk about that later. Maybe. If I feel like it. You know why? Because I am sick and tired of the media out there making heroes out of terrorists, because that's what they're doing by going on and on. Well, you know what? So if you want to talk about that, you can go listen to every other show on the damn dial. We're going to talk about stuff that actually matters, at least here in the first 2 hours. Maybe we'll talk about explosive diarrhea in the third hour, but we'll see if I feel like it. Want to get in on the conversation down here in Dallas? Here's the number for this week only. Write it down. You're going to need it. These are your public airwaves. I encourage you, as ever, to use them. Give me a call, 800-277-1. Do I have this right? 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637. Write it down. You're going to need it because you're going to be either so angry or so delighted. You're going to want to call and tell me about it. 800-277-1637. When you call in, you got to hit extension 703. We're trying to make it as difficult as possible as we can for you. No wonder AM 1360 is going off the air at the end of this week. No, they're not going. That's not why. They're going to be going to the internets, maybe even to TV. That's what I've heard some rumors about. That said, I want them on terrestrial radio. I want them on the public airwaves. I want someone out there. Is anyone listening to my plea from Dallas? Is anyone out there who can help? Is there anyone out there who can make sure that Dallas has a progressive radio station? Because I'll tell you what, Dallas County has been voting more Democratic than Republican in these last, you wouldn't know it, would you? I was listening to another radio station, one that gets to stay on the air. Why? Because it's a wingnut station. And they had an ad with Dick Cheney actually endorsing Kay Bailey Hutchinson for governor. She's running against Rick Perry in the primary. Dick Cheney is apparently an asset to Kay Bailey Hutchinson. I mean, how can that be? There's only 13% of America who actually likes Dick Cheney. Apparently they all live in Dallas. Who knew? I mean, this guy, you know, is like syphilis. I don't want him having anything to do with my campaign. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, apparently she's fine with him. She thinks it's great that he's endorsing her. You see why we got to save Dallas? You see why we came down to the Big D to AM 1360 to host Mike Malloy Show this week? It is, if you want to, we're streaming coast to coast and around the globe, by the way, not just at MikeMalloy.com, but also RationalRadio.org. They are my host here this week. We would love you to hit their website and stream the show there. If you can't get it on your car, if you can't get it on the satellite radio, over the internet, whatever, RationalRadio.org. Go stream it there this week. That's where we're going to be all week long, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. If not longer, we'll see what happens here. And we're glad to have you with us. I am the guy from bradblog.com, in case you don't know. I am that Brad. Yeah, that's me. And we are chatting in the chat room live at bradblog.com. Go to the top item over there. Hit click here for more, and you'll see the live chat room hosted by the lovely Agent 99, who is never, ever cranky at all. Right, 99? Behave yourself. Go on over there. Say hello to her. She would love to see you. Coming up on tonight's show, Igor Volsky is going to be joining me from the Center for American Progress. We're going to actually be talking about things that matter to you. Yes, we're not going to be hiding under the table, frightened of terrorists. There'll be no duct taping of the windows here at the Mike Malloy Show. We're going to talk about stuff that actually matters. Like what? Oh, healthcare. This healthcare debate is unbelievable. On it goes. We've been checking in with our friend Igor whenever I'm guest hosting for Mike Malloy. And throughout this past year, and we're going to continue doing so tonight to figure out where the hell we are. You may not have noticed, but over Christmas, Christmas Eve, I think it was, the Senate got together in secret, according to the Republicans. Nobody knew. No, they had this vote overnight. There was no way the public could know. They got together on Christmas Eve, actually 7 a.m. in the morning in the Senate, passed a historic reform bill in the Senate. Historic because it's taken this long, something like seven presidents, to pass any major overhaul of healthcare, whether you like that reform of healthcare or not, actually healthcare insurance or not. They passed it, and now it goes to a reconciliation committee between the House and the Senate. Well, for all the teabaggery out there, since we're at Rational Radio this week here in Dallas, we're going to be rational, and we're going to figure out just what the hell is in this healthcare plan, what's good about it, what's bad about it, and what it may look like once the Senate and the House get together and reconcile it. Igor Volsky is going to help us. He is the contributor to, to Howard Dean's prescription for healthcare reform, how we can achieve affordable medical care for every American and make our jobs safer. Howard Dean has some opinions about this current healthcare plan. Yeah, we're going to hear about all of it. So if you want to talk about healthcare, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Later on in the show, Frank Schaefer, the former right-wing fundamentalist leader, now a Brad Blog guest contributor, the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, helped found the religious right and lived to take all or almost all of it back. He's going to be here to talk about a bunch of things, among them his open letter from Jesus, his article, his letter to Republicans asking them why they hate America. And believe it or not, of those two articles that I just mentioned, that's not the controversial one. Perhaps the most controversial article ever at Brad Blog came from Frank Schaefer just a week or so ago. We're going to talk about that. We're going to light the controversy up all over again. I had no idea it would be that controversial. Did you, Dez? I had an inkling, but I didn't know it was going to be that controversial. So we're going to talk to him, Frank Schaefer, about that. We're going to talk to you about what you want to talk about. Have I mentioned these are your public airwaves? 800-277-1637, extension 703, your public airwaves. Use them or lose them. The folks down here in Dallas know that too well, I'm sorry to say, here at AM 1360. But we're going to keep fighting for him all week long, looking for angels along the way. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We're going to be take a quick break here, come back with Igor Volsky. We got a big, big show ahead of you, a big, big week. Like I say, Brad in for Malloy. Stick with us all night.
Rumors spreading around, tonight takes the town. Try to check outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you want to go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Com in for Mike all this week. Glad you can join us. We are broadcasting live from Dallas this week, so we have fresh new numbers for you out there. 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637. Extension 703. You can also join us in the live chat room over at bradblog.com. It's starting to get hopping over there. I'll do my best to keep my eyes on it. But first, we're going over to Igor Volsky, our old friend from the Center for American Progress. And see, these phones are sticking. There we go. Our old friend, he's the healthcare researcher and blogger at Center for American Progress, where he focuses on healthcare issues. He's a contributor to Howard Dean's prescription for healthcare reform, how we can achieve affordable medical care for every American and make our jobs safer. The favorite book for the U.S. Congress to not read at all, apparently. That said, we've been checking in with Igor whenever I've been popping in this year to cover for Mike. It's been great to be able to check in with Igor and figure out where the hell we are. That's what we're doing tonight. Hey, welcome back to the Molloy Show, Igor.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, and a belated Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, you as well.
Or as Bill O'Reilly prefers, I say, Happy Holidays, Igor. Okay, I don't know. I didn't want to talk to you about this beforehand because I don't want to know yet whether you're for it or against it. What I would like to do here is try to put the healthcare bill, now we've got two, and then there was two, one in the House, one in the Senate, put them in perspective, figure out what's good about them, what's bad about them, what we hope might change, whether we can support it, whether we need to kill it, as some have called for, some who I respect, folks like Jane Hampshire and so forth. But I don't know where you stand, Igor. We'll find that out. Let's keep that as a cliffhanger. And for the moment, if we could, for everyone who hasn't been able to keep up with this, including myself, what are we looking at currently in this healthcare package as far as the good things? What is good, if anything, about this package at this point?
Well, the good thing in both bills, the Senate and the House, is the coverage that we're extending to some 30 million Americans. 15 million will find coverage through Medicaid, which is a very good thing. We're expanding a public program, possibly the biggest expansion of Medicaid in certainly its history. And, of course, you have the insurance regulations that they can't deny you coverage because you have a pre-existing condition. They can't rescind coverage once expensive claims start coming in. They can't discriminate based on age more than a certain ratio. So you're putting insurers into this new managed competition environment. You're expanding coverage to millions of Americans. Those are good things. You know, the Senate bill also has what's called the CLASS Act, which is this new long-term care insurance program that you start paying into, and then down the road, if you have some very serious chronic illness and you can't get out of bed and you have to have care around the clock and you need help getting dressed, that kind of care you can afford, so you don't have the situation where very sick people or very old people have to spend all their assets so that they qualify for Medicaid. So there are a lot of good things in this bill. It's certainly not a perfect bill, but you know, if we're going to highlight the good parts, I think we should start there.
Well, we're going to get to the bad parts in a second, but this coverage for 30 million Americans, these are, I presume, coverage for 30 million Americans who currently do not have health care coverage. Will this actually be affordable to them? Is that when we say we're expanding it to 30 million Americans, are they getting it for free? Is it just at a lower cost? How are we expanding it to 30 million Americans?
Well, Brett, that's the big question, the affordability. And, you know, I think one of the mistakes that was made during this whole process is that a ceiling was placed of $900 billion, that the president said he doesn't want to spend more than $900 billion. It doesn't matter that it's paid for. That's the cap. And so it really kind of put the Senate and the House in a box that if they want to expand coverage to everybody and require everyone to purchase it, it's going to have to be affordable. And, you know, the affordability is the big question. So for about two-thirds of everyone in the exchange, which is about 25 million people, two-thirds of those would be receiving government affordability credits. And so they would be paying less for coverage than if no reform occurred. for Americans in the employer market, which is most of us, about 160 Americans get their coverage through their employer, you'll see almost no change. So what you have is kind of a mixed bag on the affordability front. The hope is that with some of the other delivery system reforms that this bill institutes, so changing the way providers, hospitals, and doctors are paid, that in 10, 20 years, prices won't increase as fast as they would if we did nothing. But you won't see any kind of dramatic decrease in price.
Well,
you'll just have...
Yeah, let me ask you this way. If I can't afford health care insurance right now, and I'm one of these 25 to 30 million you talk about who would be able to buy it from the exchange, do we have any, how much will it cost? Will I be able to afford it even under the exchange?
It varies. Under the Senate bill, for a fairly comprehensive policy in the exchange, that's going to run you for a family plan about $15,500 for a family of four. Now, a lot of that is going to be subsidized, again, through those affordability credits. It all depends where you fall in the income bracket, how much you get. If you get cost-sharing protection as well or just premium subsidies, depends on your situation, but it's about $15,000 in 2013, I believe. Of course, as we keep going into 16, 2017, 2018, the price will increase, but again, hopefully not as dramatically. So we're looking at about $15,000 for a family plan, about $5,000-$6,000, I believe, for an individual.
All right, hold the thought, Igor. We're speaking with Igor Volsky. We're going to get, that was the good news. We're going to get the bad news and much more after this break. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stay tuned.
Make my final stand.
The heart of Texas. Well done, Tone. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We are deep in the heart of Texas, broadcasting from the Big D, Dallas, at AM 1360, rationalradio.org. Brad sitting in for Mike, and we will be taking your calls, 800-277-1637. That's the number today, 800-277-1637, extension 703. We're speaking with Igor Volsky, of the Center for American Progress, about healthcare. And, oh, yeah, I should say I got my eye on you, Truth Seekers, over at DU. Just want to let you know, I'm watching you. Be careful what you say. We're also watching the folks at bradblog.com, where there is a chat room. And we are just hitting with Igor. Well, we hit the good points of this bill. And, well, that didn't take long, I'm afraid. Igor, getting a lot of folks ringing in on this over at Bradblog. I'm not surprised. We're going to get to the not-so-good parts of this bill. And let me let the Brad bloggers tell you what they have to say. Let's see. Commenter 4 in our live chat at Brad Blog says, the entire affair appears to be an accommodation of the healthcare insurance industry. I Hate Neocon says, healthcare at gunpoint is not reform. Barbs says not good enough, Igor. She's talking about the coverage that is supposed to be expanded to 30 million people. Barbs says it's not good enough, not for people who are earning somewhere in the middle of poverty and middle class. They don't get credits, and they can't afford the price as it is now. Is Barbs right, Igor?
Well, Barbs isn't wrong. I agree. It's not good enough. It's not the perfect bill. It's certainly not the bill that the governor and I were hoping for in the book. We were writing that you need to have a strong, robust public option if you're going to have real health care reform, because that's the only way to hold private insurers accountable. But all that being said, you know, and it's also true, I think, that the bill isn't necessarily, you know, going to give insurers a rainy day. We saw that their stock prices did just fine, although they seem to go down a bit recently after the bill's passed.
Well, it did just fine is somewhat of an understatement, Igor. They were at record levels, the health insurance companies. They hit record levels within the last week or two, I understand.
You're right. So if we're to look at the negative points of the bill, I think starting at the lack of a public option is certainly a very good place to start. And you know, it really at one point you'll remember that they took out the public plan that was in the Senate bill. They replaced it with a Medicare buy-in and some kind of a network of nonprofits that they were going to run. And then Lieberman said,
"No way." And then Joe Lieberman killed that. Thank you.
That's right. Yeah, that came out of the bill, and now we're left with what we have, which is, you know, just kind of a managed competition structure for private insurers, which isn't, you know, great, but again, isn't a total wash, I don't think. So, you know, you look at the lack of a public plan, you look at some of the regulatory problems, just the idea that there's not enough oversight, there's not any kind of new mechanism that's going to make sure that insurers are really held to account, that they they follow all these new regulations, and you have these exchanges, these new marketplaces, not on a national level like the House bill had them, but on a state-by-state level, that a lot of this regulation will be in the hands of state insurance commissioners, which really don't have a great track record of regulating much of anything.
No, and neither do they on the federal level, Igor. That's what I'm worried about. I mean, even if you put in any kind of restrictions, you know these jackasses are going to get around them. I mean,
I'm there with you. Yep, absolutely.
And I mean, look what they've done. You know, with the credit cards. You know, they brought in bankruptcy reform, credit card reform, and sure enough, before that credit card reform kicked in at the top of the year, your credit card rates went up to, you know, 30-50%. I mean, they're going to find a way around, no matter what, they're going to find their way around these. And that's why I wanted to start with the good side of it, because there seems to be so much downside. And I want to be careful, Igor, that we don't, I mentioned in the first segment that I don't know your position yet on this bill. So I don't want folks who are just tuning in to think that, I got the guy who's supporting this bill, because I really don't know if you support it or not. And frankly, I don't care. What I really care about is, you know, what's good, what's bad. Let the listeners make up their mind. But, I mean, it seems to me that we're still counting on this industry, this immoral industry, to behave themselves, to play nice, and if they don't, we're counting on this federal government to regulate them. How's that worked out for you in the past?
Yeah, no, look, absolutely. It's that, and that's going to be, you know, if we pass, the Senate passed the bill last week, it's probably going to be signed by the State of the Union, if not maybe early February, they're saying. But it's important to remember that this fight ain't over, that you have 21 states on the right who want to exempt themselves from reform by passing constitutional amendments, and then you have certainly a lot of pressure, rightful pressure, I would argue, on the oversight that's going to take place to make sure it actually happens. So, you know, we're going to pass the bill, I think. It's not going to be a perfect bill, but we're going to pass something, and hopefully they'll try to improve some things in conference. They'll have very limited amount of wiggle room to improve anything, but hopefully they'll be able to do something and then pass it. And then I think that's when the real work starts, to make sure that we have some kind of strong oversight of private insurers, and to ensure that states don't go a little nutty with this reform. One more thing to add on our negative column, which I'm aware is very long at this point, is the affordability measures are, you know, as I mentioned, are just not very good, not where they should be. The House has stronger measures, stronger out-of-pocket protections, stronger, the Medicaid is expanded towards more people, which is a lot, I think, has better out-of-pocket protections for working-class Americans, and that's very key. That's not in the Senate bill. So you kind of go down the line, and if you compare the House and the Senate, I'm afraid to say that the Senate kind of loses on every single point. You'll remember, of course, that the House bill also has a public plan, which the Senate bill can't even dream of at this point. So that's where we stand. And so the question, I guess, is it worth passing? Is it worth moving forward?
And that's what we want to know from our callers, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Let me get to a call in a quick second here. First, Big Dan, our friend over at Brad Blog in the chat room, says, what everyone needs is care when they need it. What no one needs is insurance, provided care is available when the need arises. The amount of money that would be retained and repurposed by abolishing the insurance sector entirely more than pays for the care that Americans need. Is there, a single payer was not even allowed to come up for discussion pretty much in the House and Senate, Igor Volsky. Is Big Dan right? Is there no need? What the hell is this private insurance industry good for? Anything, ultimately?
Well, you know, the only way you can make private insurers work for you is if you regulate them like utility companies, and this bill certainly doesn't make maybe some steps in that direction, but doesn't go far enough. I think the real challenge, though, of controlling healthcare costs is, of course, changing the reimbursement system of how doctors and hospitals are paid, and this bill, again, makes some very small steps in that direction. But even if you were to abolish the insurance industry, you have a one-time savings of, you know, billions of dollars, certainly. But if you have the kind of the kind of growth in costs, which is driven by overutilization, $700 billion in overutilization of unnecessary services, of the technological development, so much technology driving up costs, you know, that it increases at an astronomical rate every year, that's the real problem. So if you were to eliminate the insurance industry, which many people believe is the right thing to do, you still have to deal with these core problems of how the system is established, the very fact that the incentives are just simply wrong. They reward quantity of care, not quality of care. Mm. So you have to have some kind of pairing between regulating the insurance industry and also changing the delivery system.
Let me get to a caller, Marilyn in Berkeley, California, back in my current home state. Welcome to the Molloy Show. Marilyn, how are you?
Hey, good evening. The thing about this awful, I feel sorry for Igor having to try to make sense out of it because
I know.
It's like going into
great.
A madhouse.
I know it is.
Know, expecting order and sanity.
Yes.
Well, but my thing with this healthcare bill is that, first of all, it's tremendously unfair to the point of, I think, criminal, the way they're going to hold up the middle class. Like, we don't care about the middle class. I do, and I'm poor as a church mouse. I care that those people have decent health care and not have to send the wife and the brother-in-law to work just for the health care. But I noticed something I think is a little bit sinister, and that is that a couple of issues that our attention is not supposed to be on right now, which would be insurance, which would be this health care bill, and also the incredible, bizarre slaughter going on in Gaza. And we are asked to turn our attention to some little low-life guy with half a brain left on the airplane with a, did he have a bomb in his shoe
right.
this time?
Okay, all right, hold that thought for the third hour. We're going to try to open up the lines to anything and everything back then. Thanks for the call, Marilyn. Do appreciate it. And Igor, let's see, how can I phrase all of that in the form of a question? This issue of mandates has come up, and I don't think that a lot of people understand that originally, and help me here, Igor, to make sure that I understand this, but the reason there must be a mandate for everyone to buy in is because if you get rid of the pre-existing conditions stuff that the insurance agency pulls, that means there would be no reason for me, for example, to buy insurance at all until I break my leg, because I know the insurance company can't turn me down because they can't turn me down for a pre-existing condition. Therefore, no one would have insurance at all until they needed it. Therefore, only sick people would have insurance. If you do away with the pre-existing conditions, but don't create a mandate. Do I understand that correctly?
That's right. The only way you can get affordable coverage, the only way you can get the consumer protections that we all want is if you have a mandate. Because if young people or healthy people have no incentive to buy insurance until they're sick, then you simply overcrowd the risk pool with sick people, and there you can't even blame insurers. There, you just have too much money going out in claims, and you have to increase the premiums. You look at the way high-risk pools or catastrophic pools work in, they're about in 26 states now. They work very poorly. They cost a lot of money, both to the applicant and to the states that run them, because they have too many sick people. And so if you want to reach universal coverage, you've got to change the behavior of young and healthy people, and that's what the mandate does, is that it changes their behavior, and if it's structured correctly, it encourages them to buy coverage and to lower the cost of care, and also to get the insurers to adopt the pre-existing conditions and the rescissions and the lifetime limits and everything we're talking about in terms of making sure you have coverage when you need it.
So the when people are furious about this mandate, I suppose they have a right to be, that, you know, they could end up, well, they're not going to go to jail most likely, but they could end up paying a fine. But you can't get rid of pre-existing conditions unless everybody is in the system. It seems to me that this is the great discussion that hasn't been had, the great debate that hasn't been had over this past year, because I think it points up, well, you know, unless you want to go to single payer and make sure that the government, you know, pays for everybody for health care, but you still want to get rid of pre-existing conditions that the insurance companies have, you've got to have this mandate. It puts everybody between a rock and a hard place, doesn't it?
No, it's the glue that holds reform together. You don't have a mandate, and this whole thing falls apart. You want to talk about affordability of care? You know, you think it's bad now, it's going to go out the window.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, Igor. I got to get to a break. Brad in for Malloy. More Igor right after this. Mike Malloy program live from Dallas, Texas tonight. Brad in for Mike with Igor Volsky talking about healthcare down here at AM 1360 Rational Radio. Log in at rationalradio.org. Trying to be rational here tonight. Just a couple minutes left here, so I'm going to be quick about it, Igor. You said that the mandate is the glue that holds this election, reform package together. And then we had to get to a break. Can you expand on that real quickly, and then we'll try to get in one last call here?
Yes, the mandate, again, encourages the young people, healthy people, to join the risk pools, to buy coverage before they need it. That way they're paying in their premiums, not using anything in terms of claims, and they're financing, if the balance is right, they're financing the care of the sick people. And, of course, once the healthy become sick themselves, they, too, are taken care of. It's how insurance works. It's the only way it works. It's why employer care works so well, because you have more healthy people than sick people, and that's why everyone can pay affordable premiums.
And if we did not, if we did not mandate it, we could not get rid of the pre-existing conditions, things that the insurance companies pull, period.
Well, we could. It would just be completely unaffordable, because if you wait until the very last minute, once you develop something to buy coverage, that means that you weren't paying into the program your whole entire life, and all of a sudden you need care, and so you have a bunch of sick people. It's going to be very hard for insurers to regulate that, to ask them, make sure you have those protections in place, but at the same time, people can buy care whenever they want.
Gotcha. Let's go to St. Petersburg, Florida. PC, welcome to the Malloy Show. You got a very, very quick question for us.
I have a problem with the mandates to buy private insurance. First off, it's going to cost unnecessarily 15% to 30% administrative cost above and beyond true single payer or Medicare opt-in based on your income. And the problem I have with these politicians is they're spending $1.5 million a day in Congress. Since the first of the year, the health insurers and the big health and complexes that make money off the health care of this country, the big money boys. And the problem I have is trusting these politicians. Okay, Ed, you're a smart person. What is going to guarantee that they're going to give us subsidies to people who have bad incomes when these same politicians will not guarantee us job protection in a global free trade environment? They will not go on record. If they won't go on record and guarantee our jobs to pay for it, what's going to guarantee, with the country going broke, that they're going to keep making the subsides and guarantee the subsidies writing?
I want to get an answer.
No way to pay for it.
I want to get an answer for you, PC. Thanks for that call. Igor is smarter than me. You got an answer to PC, Igor?
Well, you know, look, the politicians have to be held accountable. There has to be a mechanism in place to make sure the insurers, more importantly, are held accountable and do as they're supposed to under this legislation. And hopefully you'll have some kind of stringent. Because, look, the bottom line is this. You have about 4 years before anything kicks in, 2014. Between then, you have two elections. If the Democrats want to win those elections, want to hold seats, and they're going to push up reforms, front load the benefits at least a bit so that people are seeing the benefits of health care reform. And this is important. They need to make sure that insurers don't increase rates in anticipation of these new regulations. It's what they're doing already, jacking up people's rates before the reforms kick in so they can maximize their profit.
Do you want to see? I got to go to a break. Igor Volsky, thank you. Very quickly, in like 5 seconds, you want to see this thing passed, fixed, or killed at this point?
You know, it's imperfect. Hopefully we'll fix it in conference, but it's either this or nothing. And if that's the choice, I think this provides us a groundwork, a framework from which to build up in future years. It's what happened to Medicare. It's what happened to any large piece of legislation. But if I want to see 23 million people uninsured in 2019 or 54 million if we do nothing, I think I'd be silly to choose the 54.
Igor Volsky from Center for American Progress. Brad, in for Mike. Much more right after this. Thanks, Igor. In for Mike Malloy all week. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas at AM 1360 Rational Radio, celebrating their final week on terrestrial radio. They'll continue on the internet. They may even continue on television. And if the radio gods are with us, well, the hell with the radio gods. What we need is an angel to put them back on the air down here in Dallas to keep progressive radio on the air in a town that needs it more than just about anyone in the whole damn nation. Please, please, someone help us out. We are celebrating their last week on terrestrial radio. I will be here all week in Dallas for Malloy, and I'm glad you can join us. You can also join us by telephone if you wish. 800-277-1637, extension 703. That's a lot of numbers. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. Got it? All right. Never enough time for anything. I'm gonna try every time I do Mike's show. I want to bring on so many guests. There's so many people that I want to talk to that I never have enough time to talk to you, the callers. So I'm going to try desperately this week, if I can, to keep the third hour open for all calls. Nothing but you. But you can also try to get in this hour, and you may want to speak to my next guest, Frank Schaefer, who's a controversial fella himself. You'll find out about that in a minute. You can log on to bradblog.com, join the chat room over there. It's hopping. I'm trying to keep my eyes on it. Also follow us on Twitter. I always forget to mention that. We are the Bradblog at Twitter. Please follow us. We'll send you funny things about explosive diarrhea and stuff. But that's our next hour. Right now, we're going to speak with Frank Schaefer. He's the former right-wing fundamentalist leader He's also, I'm proud to say, a regular Brad Blog guest contributor. He's the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. And his newest book is Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. I promised Frank I was going to speak about that one this time around with him. Now that we got a bit more time, I'm going to try to get to that new book. But he's been stirring up all kinds of stuff over at Brad Blog, and I'm delighted he has. He calls him as he sees him, and as I mentioned in the first hour, he wrote what is perhaps one of the most controversial articles at Brad Blog ever. Little did I suspect it would be quite as controversial as it was. We're not going to hit that one immediately. We're going to tease it a little bit. First, I want to get to, let me welcome Frank to the show. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Frank.
Hey, Brad. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, and a Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Hey, same to you.
You've been stirring up trouble at Brad Blog, and God love you for it. Let me hit a couple of your recent pieces very quickly before we get to this one that was apparently, shockingly, so controversial, Frank. Who knew? But let's talk first about the America-hating Republicans. You said basically that Republicans and these teabaggers, they're anti-American. You've made the case for it. This is not, or maybe this is. Is this the Republican Party, the Republican right, the religious right that you grew up with, you and your father, when you were leaders of the religious right movement, or has it changed? In other words, have they changed, or have you changed, Frank?
Well, I certainly have changed, but the religious right has changed too. You know, a thumbnail sketch here, which I cover, you know, in depth in my memoir, Crazy for God. But briefly, I was born in Switzerland to Francis Schaeffer, who became an evangelical leader. He was an American missionary who had gone over to Europe just after the Second World War. And that's where I grew up, in a little fundamentalist commune called Le Brie Fellowship. And back in those days, it was just all about saving people for Jesus and preaching the gospel. And my parents had a community wherein they had their home open to whoever came through. People could stay. And whether you agreed with the theology or not, the purpose was clearly evangelistic and religious. And then, of course, in the 1970s, Dad and I, by that time I was a young man in my early 20s, and was his sidekick in that kind of nepotistic evangelical style, both became leaders in the religious right. He being credited as one of the fathers of the religious right, me as his young, fiery son who was out there with him, talking to everybody from Ronald Reagan and the Bush family, Gerald Ford, to large audiences in places like Dallas and Atlanta and Nashville, all over the country, on the beginning of the religious right movement, which really centered around the anti-abortion movement. Mm-hmm. And in those days, it was a combination of religious fervor plus the anti-abortion cause. And then, of course, that morphed, and it morphed into two things. First of all, it morphed into the Republican Party, took over the Republican Party, became the Republican Party, subsumed the Republican Party, to the point where you had a traditional Republican like John McCain, who in 2000 called the religious right agents of intolerance. And by the time the last election came along, he had to nominate somebody, being Sarah Palin, for his vice presidential candidate in order to throw the religious right a sop and stay in good with them. And so it did change. It went from being a religious right to being a political far right, using religious terminology to keep the foot soldiers on board, but led by people like Dick Armey, who's really just a shill for corporate America on one hand, or people like Sarah Palin on the other, who were translating her religious ambition to lead sort of a weird idea about her being some sort of a prophetess who was going to help the Christian community into a political career. And so it was itself radicalized from even where we started things in the early 70s.
And when you were starting things and you were working with Jerry Falwell and the Billy Grahams and those guys, you were really on the outside of the party. Am I correct here, for folks who don't know the history here, that the religious right was not always a part of the Republican Party? You guys had to, at that time, really bang down the doors to get in. They thought you all were kooks, too. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. If you roll the clock back a little bit to that period of time, you had people people like William F. Buckley, who was a perfectly sane human being and himself practicing Roman Catholic, but certainly never to be confused with the religious right, people like Barry Goldwater and others, and their shtick was anti-communism, pro-capitalism. Then their fringe were people like the John Birch Society, but they were all about anti-communism and conspiracy theories. None of it was about a mixture of church and state. In fact, Barry Goldwater himself, for instance, was pro-choice because he didn't believe in the mixture of church and state. Ronald Reagan, as governor of California, had legalized abortion. Only later, after Roe v. Wade and after people like my dad, Dr. Sierra Koop, who became Surgeon General, that I made a film series with called Whatever Happened to the Human Race that really founded the religious rights involvement in the anti-abortion movement. Only after that period of time, when we, as you say, banged the doors down, challenged people, went and talked with folks like Jerry Falwell, said they needed to get into politics, and not just simply, you know, talk about the gospel, et cetera, et cetera. Then the religious right became something political on one hand, and the Republican Party looking for, a bigger base, for instance, blue-collar Democrats who would have voted Republican because of the abortion issue, Reagan Democrats, other people identified as former Democrats or libertarians or whatever who were swept into the movement. You know, the issues we put forward, anti-abortion and so forth, were simply used to make the tent bigger. And then were parlayed into about a 40-year period, 35-year period of Republican dominance in American politics built on these social issues that became known as the culture war. And so both in Crazy for God and in my new book, Patience with God, I talk about the movement, about how it came about, and then analyze the reaction to it, which has become itself very radicalized, and you know, you see people like Christopher Hitchens and others writing against religion per se based on the fact that they hated the way it was politicized, and now of course the whole thing has become you know, very, very polarized, and that's where we are today.
You took them to task in Dear Republicans, Why Do You Hate America, which you can read at bradblog.com. You said, you are doing, in this letter to Republicans, you wrote, you are doing to our whole country, and I should say this is in regard to blocking health care, blocking same-sex marriage, using it as a political wedge. You said, you are doing to our whole country what Bush did to New Orleans after Katrina, looking the other way and playing politics while the rest of us go down. You Republicans are the ones who, to use your very own Sarah Palin's word, are not the, quote, real Americans. You are members of a lie-based evangelical paranoid cult. Enough. If prayer is what you call for now, here's my prayer. May the Republican Party, with all its lies, hate, stagnation, and obstructionism, be swept away by our first black president's success against all odds. Frank Schaefer, we're going to talk about that success, if it comes, if it happens, and your opinions on it, which caused quite a stir, I should add. Also about your comparison, comparing the evangelical right in America here with the Taliban, which I think you're right on the money about. We're speaking with Frank Schaefer. We're going to talk with him. Take your calls at 877-277-1637, extension 703. I'm Brad Friedman, in for Mike Malloy. Going to take a quick break and come back with much more of Frank Schaefer for this, the entirety of this hour. So we hope you'll join us. Stay tuned.
He will bring you down. He will get you high. And something keeps him going. Treats you right, baby, it's the guitar man.
Oh, the yellow rose of Texas is the only gal I love. Her eyes are even bluer than Texas. Texas skies above. Her heart's as big as Texas, and wherever I may go, I'll remember her forever because I love her so. There are so many roses that bloom along the way.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Yeah, and that's the Yellow Rose of Texas, because we are live in Dallas tonight. Sitting in for Mike Malloy, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, speaking with Frank Schaefer, author of Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. And I promise, Frank, that I will talk to you about that in a moment. Let's get to it. Let's get to it in this way. And then after the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about the most controversial column ever at BradBlog, where Frank is now a regular contributor. But we want to establish his bona fides here in this area. Here's an open letter, a quick piece from an open letter from Jesus to Christian America. Christian is in quotes as Frank wrote this. He completes this letter from Jesus to Christian America, saying, "If I walked here on earth again with you, you'd kill me again. Just as you are going to kill all that is good in my name, just as some of you are praying for the death of your president, who you even call Antichrist. Let me tell you who is Antichrist. Christian saved America. Depart from me. Please come up with a new name for whatever you are. Drop the word Christ out of your name. You've destroyed my reputation." We love that. We love that, Frank. And Sean is giving me a thumbs up from the booth here. You've compared the religious right in America. You know them well. You've left them. You've compared them to the Taliban. Are they really that different, Frank, than the Taliban?
Yeah, you know, I wish that was just hyperbole, but of course it's a matter of degree. But no, they're not, because once you have a group of people who have decided that they're getting direct messages from God through either prophecy or their scriptures or the Quran or whatever, and that they don't have to win their points on the basis of either reason or public support, then you have the basis of a theocracy. So if you look at what folks like James Dobson have done, in the way he has wound the base of the Republican Party around mm-hmm. his finger, told them how to vote. If you look at the way the evangelical community has remained silent, that's the quote-unquote respectable leaders, over things such as the bumper sticker calling for president's death based on a psalm where the prayer is an imprecatory prayer for the death or removal of someone. You know, if you look at folks showing up at town hall meetings with loaded assault weapons, wearing T-shirts or carrying signs talking about the Tree of Liberty being watered with the blood of tyrants, which is a repeat of what Timothy McVeigh had on his T-shirt the day he did the Oklahoma bombing,
yeah.
Then it's just a matter of degree and it's a matter of time. And one of the things I've written about on your blog site and also in my books, like Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, is I argue that this movement is driven by a kind of a paranoid fear of the other. And, of course, what's so ironic in America is that while they fear the other, while they act as if they're a persecuted minority, the evangelicals have actually been in command of the country, in the sense that this minority has been the voter base that kept George Bush in office for 8 years, the Republicans dominant in Congress for over 30 years, basically trashed the presidency of the Clinton years in terms of the way they took him down and hounded him virtually out of office. When you add it all up, you know, this is not a persecuted minority. This is a theocracy waiting in the wings that has a theology called Reconstructionism at its heart, where they want to take America back for Jesus, quote unquote, which is an odd sentence since it never belonged to Jesus in the beginning with a country.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, there's no taking it back. I mean, this was a country that, you know, was founded by everybody from Virginia colonists who came over to make a buck, to Puritans in the Bay State, to Jews and Dutchmen and all the rest of it down in New York and on all over the map. And so, you know, really, it isn't different from the Taliban. And one of the things I've argued in my books and also in my columns that I've written for you and for other people is that if these folks were living in the best of all possible worlds, as far as they're concerned, they would be doing things such as they were doing, you know, back in the day when witches were being hung and burnt, and where you had death penalties against gay people, mm-hmm. homosexuals, and so forth. It's not far-fetched. And there is a whole wing of the Reconstructionist movement that I write about in Patience with God that has gone out of its way to say that they think that the law of the United States ought to be changed to match Old Testament biblical law that really would have people out there incurring death penalty for homosexual behavior, whatever it is. And so, yeah, I'm sorry to say that we really do have our own version of the Taliban.
Hold the thought. Frank Schaefer and the most controversial column ever at Brad Blog right after this. Brad in for Malloy.
Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike all week long. Live from the Big D, that's right, Dallas, Texas, at AM 1360, Rational Radio, the final days of Rational Radio. How rational radio will be after they're gone, I can only guess. Because it ain't all that rational now. We're speaking with Frank Schaefer, the former right-wing fundamentalist leader, very former at this point, author of Crazy for God and Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. He's also a Brad Blog guest contributor. He regularly writes over there now. Stirred up a lot of trouble over the past week or so, and we're going to hit that in a moment. But I want to respond, Frank, to... Oh, there we go. I want to respond, Frank, to one, a couple of the points you made as you were comparing America's religious right with the Taliban and how this became a political movement. You know, I don't think that George W. Bush, as long as I'm here in Texas, I don't think these guys, in truth, give a damn about Christianity. I don't believe they give a damn about Jesus, frankly, any more than it gets them votes. Period. Because if they did, I can't imagine anyone who actually follows Christ's teachings could run a presidency the way George W. Bush did. Am I out of line to make that accusation, Frank?
Well, I think if you wind up at a place in history where you live in a country where in one of the major political parties claiming to be the party where evangelicals find a home believes in legal torture but not in universal health care, that kind of sums up where it's gone in view of what I think anyone who read the New Testament would come away believing in terms of where Christ would be if given a vote on any of these questions. And so whether you believe in Jesus, whether you believe in the Bible, whether you are a Christian or an atheist or agnostic, I don't think an objective reading of the New Testament leaves you in a place thinking that whatever led this movement would be for torture and against health care. So the Republican Party is in a weird position because its base of operation is in a religious movement, and that religious movement has so denied its own roots that it itself is no longer religious in the sense that it's commonly understood. It's just a very tough-minded, selfish, pro-business group of people who, I'm afraid, also straight to the lunatic, paranoid fringe and include so many people now who are on that fringe that... You know, when you hear about three policemen gunned down in Pittsburgh by someone who thinks that Obama's going to take away his weapons, or somebody strolls into the Holocaust Museum in Washington and shoots down an African-American security guard,
yep.
Obviously these things aren't a conspiracy, but violence and extreme action is really in the air. You know, you only got to listen to 10 minutes of Glenn Beck on any day, or what spews out of Fox News, or realize that George Bush essentially used his security apparatus of the United States to keep people on edge so that he would not be questioned. And you understand that, you know, this has nothing to do with religion as it's normally understood. religion is being used to push forward something very, very different.
Yes, I think Jesus may have frowned upon walking into a church and shooting a doctor in the head, as was the case with Dr. George Tiller down in Kansas. I wrote again about a Nazi Republican out here in Houston who actually shot someone in cold blood over the last day or so. Happily, he was apprehended. But he has a Nazi SS tattoo on his neck and a Republican sticker on the Republican Party bumper sticker on the back of his pickup truck. That's, I'm afraid to say, what's become of the Republican Party. And you have been top-notch as far as calling them out on that, Frank Schaefer. But what seems to have caught the ire of a lot of folks at the Brad Blog was your column from last week. Let me see. It's entitled "Obama Will Win: Why and How His Critics from the Left and Right Will Be Proven Wrong." And well, you've gone after the right in article after article at Brad Blog, and now you went after the left as well. And I guess it got the dander up of some of our folks, and they might want to talk to you at 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. Essentially, Frank Schaefer, you made the case for Barack Obama, and it ticked a lot of people off. Give us what is the case at this point for Barack Obama, and let's see if we can tick off everybody else.
Well, the case for Barack Obama, first of all, is who he's not. He's not John McCain and Sarah Palin. So my message to folks is just get a grip, because we live in a real world, and in that real world, there's always an alternative to where you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, for folks, for instance, who listen to his pro-gay, pro-gay rights speech and say, okay, speech isn't fast enough, you know, why don't we have gay marriage in all 50 states yet, and why don't we have gays serving openly in the military, I say amen, yes. You know, it's a civil rights issue, but when it comes to Barack Obama, don't lay everything at his door just because in 1 year in office he hasn't managed to achieve everything you hope for. If it comes for getting out of Afghanistan and getting out of Iraq, you know, let's remember, he didn't take us to war in those countries. And so I think a lot of my problem with the critique of Barack Obama from the right, of course, is that, as I talk about impatience with God, the right is literally unhinged. When it comes to the left, my critique is that the left is too impatient, and I don't think really understands what the alternative would be, perhaps as well as someone such as myself, who comes hot out of that alternative,
mm-hmm.
and who understands where it would take us, maybe to a degree some people don't. You know, where I'm coming from is I get up every day just happy that we don't have a Sarah Palin and John McCain in office. I also get up every day realizing that, for instance, on something like health care reform, that if we get anything out of a Congress that is stymied by the obstructionist Republicans who would use the filibuster to try to destroy any chance of doing anything that would change the status quo on any level when it comes to business, health care, war issues, or anything. But, you know, there's folks out there that say half a loaf is better than no loaf. You know, I'm at a point after looking at the last 30 years of American history where I'm very grateful just for one slice off the loaf. And I think, I guess, buy into the idea of incremental change. And I think given an 8-year, two-term presidency, Barack Obama will be able to achieve the things that I believe he sincerely has set out to do. I just think people have been in too much of a hurry. So I don't think the disagreement so much is over where folks would like to see this go. I think I would be in line with most progressives on that. I think where I step out of that line is in the kind of hurry-up-already mode that is ready to give up after barely 12 months. I just don't think that shows a very good grip of how history works, let alone politics.
Well, I concur with you on that point, but let me make a couple in response. A, did he really need to send 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan?
I have no idea. I'm not a military strategist, and I wouldn't know, but I would like to ask what, you know, out of all the various terrible alternatives that have been put on his plate by George W. Bush,
right,
who took us into Iraq instead of doing exactly what his military leaders were saying when it came to surrounding Tora Bora, using the full force if we were going to be there to catch bin Laden. You know, we have been put in a no-win situation, and so any alternative there is horrible. And anybody who's reading about the situation, anybody who's keeping track of it knows that, you know, as everyone says, the real fight is in Pakistan. The real fight is elsewhere. There are no simple solutions here. I have no idea, but I do know this, and that is whatever he's doing there, you can just trumpet and triple it and quadruple it if John McCain had been there. And the reality is that we have a country that has been taken to war by George W. Bush in one completely unnecessary war, one bungled war. And other than people who are philosophically or religiously pacifist, which I think is a perfectly legitimate position that I don't happen to share, but nevertheless,
yeah.
But other than those folks, and they have a good argument against all war and all armed conflict, which is fine, but unless you're one of those people, I'd like to hear the great idea on Afghanistan. And I think he's been presented with a series of very, very bad alternatives. And it's one thing to sit down and write about it. It's another thing to wake up one morning as commander-in-chief of this mess.
Okay, but now, and you make all good points, but did Barack Obama not say that we needed to make him do these things? We needed to make him do these things that need to be done. In other words, the left is not like the right. The right tends to get into, lockstep behind their leader, and they say, oh, well, they're not perfect, but we support them. We're with them all the way, wherever we can. Isn't it our job? Isn't it our job not only as progressives, folks on the left, Democrats, but as Americans?
Sure.
Isn't it our job to call on the president to do better? We can say, hey, way to go, Obama, Sarah Palin, you're not John McCain, but shouldn't we be holding his feet to the fire? And when you then hold the feet to the fire of those critics for doing exactly that, it's our job, Frank.
I agree, and I think in a democracy it's our job to voice opinions, but of course another opinion is to say once in a while, hey, listen, when you have a president who, if his presidency fails, not only does this country fail, but the progressive movement for the foreseeable future is done. This was your shot. You better play your cards carefully, and I'll give you an example. You know, you have somebody like Paul Krugman, who for months has been writing warning things about President Obama, criticizing him on economic policy, on health care. Yeah, but when push came to shove, he said, yes, but this health care bill is a good one in terms of the contrast of what would happen if nothing was done. We've got to get behind it. So, yeah, you have a Paul Krugman who's a critic, who's holding his feet to the fire, but at the critical moment also weighs in with some support. And I think that shows some balance. I'm not saying that I think it's perfect or that everybody's got to be a Paul Krugman. But on the other hand, I think there's another aspect of the critique of President Obama that's simply being a sort of a left-wing version of hoping he'll fail so we can be proved right. Mm. And I really think there is a kind of a death wish in part of, not the general progressive movement, but part of the progressive movement that I think is so used to a kind of a psychologically embattled position, almost that they've been taken hostage, and they just can't get used to the idea that once in a while you can actually win. You don't always have to be standing on the fringe making comment. You know, sometimes you're in a winnable situation. And I think, to me, the tragedy of a critique that goes too far is that it saps the kind of public support and will, say, with young voters who waded in for the first time on this election and so forth, that actually hands victories that are unnecessary to the Republicans. I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. I don't think any progressive could have been sitting there rejoicing to watch John McCain on the Senate floor gleefully saying that he was all for the progressives now who wanted to stop the health care bill. And, of course, he was being facetious. But nevertheless, you know, at a certain point, you just have to say, hey, part of this is right and wrong and principle. But it's not all principle. It's tactics, too. And that's where I think some of the progressive movement goes off the rails.
Yeah.
They forget that it's not just all a matter of principle and huffing and puffing.
Yeah.
It's tactics.
Yeah, and I think on that end, some of them aren't smart. When we turn this thing into a personal thing, when we turn this thing into Barack Obama is just the same as George W. Bush, I think that's naive. I think that's short-sighted. Yes, the effect of both of their policies policies may end up similar in many ways. But I think you're right. I think you're undercutting your best hope, and there's a smarter way to do it, to be both critical without undercutting him. Let's get to your calls after this break, 800-277-1637. Our final break, we'll be back with Frank Schaefer. Much more, Brad in for Malloy, right after this. Sing it, John.
Laughing in the face of love. What on earth you trying to do? It's up to you. Yeah, you.
All right, welcome back to the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Frank Schaefer, our last few minutes here. I did promise that I was going to allow Frank this time to get in at least a few words about his newest book, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. But let me get to a quick call. And if I, by the way, if I don't get to you this hour, the whole next hour, all calls, all you at 800-277-1637. Extension 703. Let me get to, where are we here? Line two, learning how these work. Tom in Dallas, welcome to the Malloy Show. Question for Frank Schaefer.
Yeah, hi, Brad. Hi, Frank. Hey, the religious right operative, Justice Scalia, engineered the coup that put George Bush in office in 2000 by stopping the recount in Florida. And I know that Brad is aware that there have been other operatives on the religious right who have had an effect on elections. I'm thinking of Mike Connell in 2004.
Yeah.
And I would like for Brad, you and Frank to maybe talk about people on the religious right who are willing to commit treason in order to push their particular agenda and put people into office that shouldn't be there.
Thanks for your call, Tom. I'm going to let Frank handle that, and then I will pick up my thoughts in the next hour. Frank, you have a thought on
that? Well, yeah, and people have written on this, including you, Brad, and, of course, Mark Miller and others who have investigated the whole vote-stealing and vote-rigging thing. And you got to understand, as I was saying before and as I argue in my book Patience with God, you have a right-wing religious group of people who believe God is on their side, just like the Taliban. If you look at the theology of the suicide bombers in the Middle East, who are perfectly willing to kill even other Muslims in view of their cause being so just in their viewpoint, we have an American equivalent here, and that is people who are totally ready to subvert democracy in this country based on the fact that they believe that they are somehow morally superior beings and right in what they are doing. And you see it in the Bush presidency. You see it in the way Karl Rove spread lies about John McCain in 2000, saying he had a black illegitimate child. They knew it was a lie. Everybody knew it was a lie, but it just worked slightly well enough to tip the scales in the primaries. You know, you see a bag of dirty tricks.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff is justified on some sort of spurious theological basis that they have God on their side, and that some higher law, quote-unquote, than the U.S. Constitution applies. And so we're in a position where people who take a different point of view have to insist that whether it's a military chaplain who's using the army to proselytize young recruits, or whether it's the President of the United States, that their loyalty has to be to the Constitution of the United States, not to the Bible, not to a higher law, quote-unquote, but to the job that they're elected to carry out. And the same thing in election and vote stealing. You have to understand that the rules of democracy don't apply to folks who think that they're following some higher law that supersedes all other laws. And if they can be doing that sincerely and or just using it so that they get foot soldiers, as I argue with patients, with God, it comes out exactly the same way.
The end justifies the means.
Yeah, absolutely. And religious conviction is extraordinarily dangerous as a motivator for anti-democratic behavior. You see it in the Middle East. You see it right here in this country.
I wanted to ask you about your book, and I feel it's terribly unfair because we're up against the back of the hour. Here was the question that I have for you, and I don't know if you can answer this in 30 seconds or not, but the book is Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. I don't care for religion myself, Frank.
Right.
I think it's caused a hell of a lot of trouble in this world that we're in right now.
Right.
And I'd want to know why I should have patience for anybody who feels otherwise. That said, I'm coming up at the back of the hour. I don't know if you can hang on for 6 or 7 minutes at the top of the hour to give you at least a fair chance.
Sure, sure. I'd love to. I'll be right there.
All right. Hang in there with me, Frank. Appreciate it. And hang in, those of you who are on the lines at 800-277-1637, extension 703. We will get to all of your calls in the next hour, I promise. So call in now. Get in line now. Chat over at bradblog.com, where things are getting heated, and I can't even keep up with them. But we're going to finish up with just a few minutes with Frank after the top of the hour, and then get to all of these calls. Brad, in for Malloy. Live from Dallas, stay with us. Program. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, muckraker, troublemaker from bradblog.com, sitting in, drafted into duty, being the media for our friend Mike Malloy, letting him have the week off. Broadcasting live from Dallas all week long, AM 1360. Rational Radio, rationalradio.org. This is their last week on terrestrial air unless something happens. They will stay on the internet. They will stay, hopefully, even on TV. But we'd love to keep them on the air somehow. You guys have any good ideas about that? Let us know. Let Rational Radio know. They'd love to hear from you. They could use your help. Progressive radio matters. You're not going to hear Frank Schaefer in a whole hell of a lot of other places, and certainly not here in Dallas if it wasn't for KMNY AM 1360. Our phone lines are filling up. We're going to get to them in a second. You can get us at 800-277-1637, extension 703. You can also, by the way, follow us at the live chat room at bradblog.com. Over on Twitter, we are The Brad Blog. Cody Cruz writes to say, hey, great job on The Malloy Show. You had me at, quote, explosive diarrhea. Yeah, that's coming up after we're done with Frank Schaefer. We'll explain that in a minute. But, Frank, I wanted to give you the opportunity, since I keep getting you on air, but we never get to talk about this. You don't talk about it that much over at Brad Blog, where you guest blog. So my question for you on your new book, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. Prior to the break, I asked you, I said, well, I'm one of those people who doesn't care for religion. Why should I have patience with God? Why should I have patience with these folks who are shoving God down my throat towards their political ends or for any other ends? Why do I have to have patience? I'll bite.
Well, you don't have to have patience with any of those folks, but I think what everybody would do well to have patience with is our paradox and the dilemma we human beings find ourselves in, whether we're atheists, agnostics, Buddhists, Hindus, Christians, or none of the above. And that is, we are biologically evolved machines living in a silent universe, but we stare at that world through spiritual eyes, looking for meaning. And as long as we have questions about meaning, spirituality is going to be part of the human experience. And so what I argue for in Patience with God is two things. First of all, I argue against fundamentalism in all its forms. In other words, any idea that you have the truth, capital T, whether you are Christopher Hitchens or whether you're Billy Graham. And then I argue for a type of spirituality that is not religion-based, but is based simply in the fact that we all need to have human relationships. We're all looking for meaning in our lives, and whatever label you put on it, there's no use throwing the baby out with the bathwater and saying, to hell with all spirituality, because George Bush or Dr. Dobson or any of these jokers have so screwed up religion and the name of religion that I no longer want anything to do with it. Fine, you know, never go back to a church or go to one or call yourself anything in particular. But don't settle for easy secular answers either when it comes to this issue of meaning and spirituality, because it's a bigger world out there than we can understand, and I think we're more like ants on the side of a freeway looking at passing traffic, making big declarative statements about whether God exists or doesn't exist or the cosmos is just not the way to go. So what I argue for in Patience with God is a couple of things. First, I just say that the new atheism's tone reminds me a lot of the evangelism I left. I secondly talk about the absolute moral failure and bankruptcy of the religious right, and I think I dissect them better in this book than anybody has so far anywhere when it comes to this whole cult of the return of Christ and all the things that flow from that, the weird Christian Zionism that loves war in the Middle East and hates peace talks, all this. I take it apart in the book, but then I go on and say, hey, nevertheless, whatever you want to call it, we are spiritual creatures. We all look for something to give our lives meaning. We all try to find purpose in life. Whether you believe in an afterlife or God isn't the point. The point being that you can't just laugh at all this stuff and say it's all ridiculous, and rather it's better to accept the paradox that there we are, we're biological creatures evolved, we live in these machine-like bodies, and yet we look for meaning. And the very fact that we have those questions, I think, points to a type of spirituality, whether you want to call it that or not, that needs to be dealt with in a compassionate and patient way. Not so much with other people, but in ourselves, because we struggle with these paradoxes. And so I think I put forward something that's very reasonable, and that people from all different kinds of backgrounds, be it atheist, agnostic, or Christian, or whatever, I can look at it. And I just may add this. I'm getting a lot of email from this book from people who are burnt out former evangelicals, fundamentalists, Roman Catholics, were raised religious or had some born-again experience, saying at last, someone's telling my story. Thank you for saying that there's an alternative and that I don't have to either be Christopher Hitchens or Pastor Rick Warren, that, you know, there's a better way here. And that's what the book's about.
Fair enough. Although I would ask this. Why can't I look at it and say it's ridiculous?
Well, sure you can, but then you can also look at, Christopher Hitchens and say, hey, you know, here's a guy who used to be a Trotskyite Marxist who then became a kind of an anti-imperialist and then flip-flopped and becomes George Bush's shill pushing for, you know, war in the Middle East. And so, yeah, of course there's religion is ridiculous, but, you know, then so was Pol Pot, who used his atheism to go murder 2 million people. I mean, you know, my whole beef with the new atheists that I talk about in Patience with God is not with atheism. It's with people who think religion is the only problem we have. The problem we have is we're human beings. We are rapacious, ape-like creatures who just fell out of the trees and are ready to tear each other's faces off. That's our problem. And whatever name you give it, whether you call it atheism or Christianity or whatever, that may be the excuse of the day, you know, like the soup du jour. Yeah. But the real problem is the human condition. And so that's why we've got to look at spirituality. We can't just wish it away or mock it away. We've got to actually deal with why do we have these spiritual feelings. And as we've seen with the religious right in America, if they are used for terrible purposes, then nothing is worse. But on the other hand, you know, as we've seen with other people who have looked at spirituality in a different way, whether it's a Nelson Mandela or somebody like that, it can be turned to good purposes that make life better for people. And so I just don't think atheists are going to get anywhere by simply thinking that if there's no religion, the world will be a better place. It would be great if, you know, it's like the people who laugh about France who say, you know, I'd love France if it wasn't for French people. Well, you know, religion would be fine if it wasn't that human beings were religious, and so would atheism.
Yeah.
I mean, our problem is we're human beings, and our human condition is one that is just semi-evolved you know, we've been here at geological eye blink, and we still have a lot of bugs to work out.
Frank Schaefer, you're a smart man. Whether I agree with you or not on everything, I don't care. I'm in favor of people being smart, being nuanced, sorting things out, getting rid of this you're either with us or against us mentality. So thank you for all of that. But I will add that I will say that I can look at Christopher Hitchens and say he's ridiculous. I have no problem doing that.
Well, hey, you're halfway there.
All right.
Then all you got to say is the same thing about Rick Warren, and, you know, then we can buy each other drinks, and we're all on the same page.
No problem there either. Ridiculous indeed. See, common ground found again. Thank you, Frank Schaefer. Really appreciate all you've done, not just for your country, but certainly at Brad Blog over the past year. You have been a great contribution to the blog. It's really terrific to have your voice there. I appreciate all your good work. Keep it up. I look forward to spending the new year with you, my friend.
Hey, and I say the same about Brad Blog. It's refreshing. And one of the things that amazes me, and then I'll get off here and get to your callers, is just the fact that when I read all the responses, unlike, you know, a number of other blogs I write for that all tend to be from one point of view, you seem to have a very eclectic group of people who really do come to Brad Blog from different positions. So it's very refreshing, actually, to participate there.
We call it democracy, and we're all in favor of it.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you, brother. Have a great New Year's, my friend.
You too. Talk soon.
You bet. Frank Schaefer, author of Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and a fellow muckraker and troublemaker now at bradblog.com. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's all you, all your calls. Plus, don't make me do it. I'll go into that stack of teabag stuff if I have to. I don't want to, but I got plenty of teabaggery if we don't hear from you. Although you guys are calling in, plenty of you lining up, so I'll be happy to talk to you with about whatever's on your mind, including explosive diarrhea, if we must. That's my new code word for terrorism. And the cowards and the children and the whiners and the babies who are hiding under the table scared to death that they're going to be the next victim of terrorism in this country. What a bunch of cowards and losers. Yeah, I have a feeling we are going to go into that teabag stack. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Much more straight ahead, live from Dallas. Much more right after this.
A Sunday morning when we go down to church, see the men folks standing in line. Don't say they come to pray to the Lord, but when my little girl looks so fine. And in the evening when the sun is sinking low, everybody's with the warmth they love.
Cry me real.
The Mike Malloy Program, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike all week long. Glad you can join us. We are taking your calls, as promised, at 800-277-1637. Did you get that? 800-277-1637. Then you got to dial extension 703. No wonder AM 1360 here in Dallas is going off the air. They can't. They get an extension? Who can get through to you people? Oh, see, that's going to... What, Des? What? Huh? What? I'm cold? I know. We are broadcasting live from Dallas here the last week on terrestrial radio for Rational Radio. They will be on the internets, maybe on the TVs. And maybe back on the air if I have anything to say about it. And as it turns out, I don't. But I'm glad to be here anyway on their last few days for now on the air. So I was sitting at the, we were trying to watch Sherlock Holmes over the weekend. And all of a sudden my handy dandy new iPhone goes off. Somebody gave it to me for a gift, and it's Twittering, and it's MSNBCing, and it's APing, and, there's another arrest at the airport in Detroit, where the same plane from the 2 days before, another Nigerian hit, and what is it? The Nigerian had stomach problems. There was no explosives. It was explosive diarrhea, and the media was in a panic. They were, oh, it was, oh, here we go again. It was a terrible... Now, going back to a few days earlier on Christmas, when this Nigerian guy tried to set off this whatever, you know, people, I was reminded of... Remember that those guys, what was it, Dylan Klebold and whatever it was back from Columbine? You know... Those kids, they went in the high school, they shot up a bunch of people. They wanted to be famous. They wanted to have their face on the cover of Time and Newsweek. So what did Time and Newsweek do? They put their faces on the cover! You know, you people who are freaking out about terrorism, never mind you people. Of course you people are freaking out about it because the media is telling you to do it. Because all the radio shows are talking about it. Because Fox News loves this stuff. They live off this crap, you know, scaring you about terrorism. Do you think that the terrorists would like this coverage? Yes, they love it. What would they hate? They would hate it if you ignored them. They would hate it if the president, the military, whoever it is, the law enforcement went about their job, put these bastards in jail, did whatever they had to do with them, and all the rest of us would ignore them. But no, we can't, because they are a tremendous threat to our very way of life. They're going to take us over. The Muslim extremists, we're terrified of them. You know, Nate Silver over at 538.com today helped put things in perspective. He wrote that he does odds and analysis over there, statistics, polls. He looks at them. He did a great job of looking at just what are the odds of being on an airplane that will be attacked by a terrorist. Well, over the past decade, the last 10 years, and this includes even if you got on a plane 20 times a year, all right, your odds of being on an airplane attacked by a terrorist over the past decade is 1 in 10,408,947. And that's for the past decade. Imagine what the odds are of being on a plane attacked by a terrorist in the past year. So, 1 in 10,408,947. Now, let's put that in perspective. The odds of being hit by lightning in any single year, 1 in 500,000. 1 in 500,000. And yet, we have no war on lightning. Come on, people! Man up, for Christ's sakes! I mean, this is just, you know, ridiculous. How scared are we? How frightened are we of these losers? How many more wars are we going to wage? Oh, great, now we gotta go to war in Yemen. I know, we're already in Yemen, but now we're gonna have to invade it. We gotta invade Nigeria. As it turns out, apparently we're gonna have to invade London now, too, because that's where this guy studied. Jesus Christ, is it just me? Can we get on with our lives? Can we stop being babies? I mean, you know, I can't remember now who it was who tweeted this, so my apologies. Oh, it was Robinson over at Grist. What's his name, Des? Dan? Dave Roberts over at Grist, yeah. He said that on Sunday when the second Nigerian came in, apparently the Republicans had a whole bunch of sudden underwear bombers themselves. Man up, people. All right. Your calls coming up, 800-277-1637, extension 703. I'll shut up. I'll let you talk. These are your airways, after all. They're not mine. Oh, wait, they're mine, too. 800-277-1637, extension 703. It's going to be all you. I ain't going to go into the teabag file unless you make me. Brad, in for Malloy.
The eyes of Texas are upon you. Oh. something.
Week. Crank it, Tone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Yes, I do.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it's not right, because AM 1560 is leaving soon.
I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
No stairs here.
Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am stuck in the middle with you. And no place I would rather be, even from down here in Dallas, where we'll be broadcasting all week long. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly guest host this week, as Mike is having a bit of a break, much deserved for the holidays. You can get us at 800-277-1637, extension 703. Whatever is on your mind. I should note, by the way, since I'm always beating up on Texas and everything else, I should note that Dallas County, a federal judge, has now disallowed touchscreen voting machines from ES&S to be used. You didn't know that, did you, Sean? Sean, the engineer?
I missed that one.
You missed that one, right? Because you're in Dallas, and there's no media other than you guys, and if you guys don't tell us about it, who's ever going to know? Yeah, they're throwing out those touchscreen machines, sort of, kind of, down here in Dallas County. Good for you, Dallas. Unfortunately, they're not going to throw them out. You can get the whole story at bradblog.com. If I have more time this week, I will cover it. But I just want to say, hey, good on Dallas. Good on the Democratic Party, by the way, who brought the lawsuit. To get rid of those machines, we're actually fighting the use of those machines because they don't count straight votes, straight party votes properly. Bad on the Democratic Party for not understanding that those machines don't count votes correctly at all. And if they do, you couldn't prove it. We tried to invite the chair of the Democratic Party on the air this week. They preferred not to come. Sean, can you do anything about that? You got any friends with the state Democratic Party here in Texas that...
I don't, but I have friends who might.
Boyd Ritchie. I'd like to talk to Boyd Ritchie. He says he can't talk because the case is pending or some nonsense. I'd like to talk to Boyd Ritchie and congratulate him for the win that they had for now and help him to understand a thing or two about these machines. So let's see if we can get, if you can help me out, Boyd Ritchie, chair of the Texas Democratic Party. Love to get him on the show this
see
week.
See what I can do for you.
While I'm down here in Dallas. Thank you, sir. Let's go to, how do these phones work again? There we go. Derek in Dallas. Wait a minute. There we go. Derek in Dallas. I have no better luck here in Dallas with these phones than I do in L.A. Hey, Derek, what's up? Welcome to the Mike Malloy program.
Well, Mr. Confidence is being bought along slowly.
Mr. Who?
Mr. Confidence, Sean.
Oh, okay. Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah, we're bringing him along.
Yeah. It was very refreshing what Mr. Schaefer had to say because I have, as part of my occupation, kept an eye on the radical right for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, when Ronald Reagan... Almost 30 years ago, started off his presidential campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi. There's a lot of messages and things like that. When W needed to go to Bob Jones University to speak, and so forth. Those are little subtle things out there. And then Dobson really got where he really wasn't subtle and said that he was praying for rain in Colorado, that it would flood the place where Obama gave his acceptance speech.
Yeah, I remember that. Those guys are pathetic.
It flooded where Dobson lives. Okay? So I find that very ironic. And back to Obama.
Yeah.
I know you said that I think it was the progressive hope. It's just getting close to it. Two or three things stand out. One is Jen Napolitano woman. Today the thing worked. Yesterday it didn't work, okay?
Yeah.
That's the third time for her. You've had four people close to this man, the uninvited couple and a couple from Georgia.
Yeah.
Four people within a Mont Blanc pen of his carotid artery.
Yeah.
Okay? He's not being protected.
I hear you. Okay?
And so John knows who this is, and I know a little bit about protection, okay? But he's got maybe one more shot. And I'm going to tell you, the one thing that he did wrong was...
The one thing that he did wrong, real recently...
is to send us additional 30,000 troops into the meat grinder.
That ain't the only thing that he done wrong. I appreciate the call, Derek. I got to move along. I want to try to get in as many folks as I can. He's done more than one thing wrong, although I don't then like his use of the phrase, give him one more shot. That's the last thing we need. Line three, let's go to Ron in Prescott, Arizona. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Mike Malloy program. What's up?
Good evening, Brad. I'd just like to encourage you and all liberals and conservatives to take a look at the men who buy the politicians, the billionaires,
yep.
the billionaire families, the billion-dollar corporations
mm-hmm.
who buy politicians all over the world mm-hmm. to gain greater control of governments so they can gain greater control of people.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of these billionaires are working together to yep. create a world government and a world economy so they can have total control over every government on Earth and every person on Earth.
Well, you know what? I think mission accomplished. They already got all of that, as far as I can tell. And I don't, you know, I'm not into these. I'm not one of the one world, new world order folks. The money, they got the money. They got the country. They got the U.S. If they got the U.S., they got the rest of the world. I mean, until we get, and I was talking to Sean during the break about this, until we get the money out of the campaigns, we're screwed. The corporate money, you know, rules, and everyone else can go to hell. And that's about to get a whole lot worse. I'm sorry to say that's about to get a whole lot worse in the next couple of days here when the Supreme Court finally comes back with their decision that says, oh, corporations could give as much money as they want. Even the tiny little limits that we have right now on corporate funding of campaigns, we're getting rid of that. That's coming too, Sean. Did you know about that? It's going to get worse rather than better. Let me get to, well, I don't want to hang up on, how do I hang up? Here we go. Let's see if I do that right. Did I do it wrong? I hung up on the wrong person.
No, you good.
Okay, I'm good. Okay, well, then I don't know who's on. We're going.
She's working on
She's
it.
She's too slow. Ooh, Desi. Are you done with the call screening? All right, let's go to Calvo in Minnesota, I believe. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Calvo.
Yes, hi, Brad.
Hi.
I just have a comment about Mr. Schaefer saying that the liberals are being impatient with Obama.
Yeah.
That's kind of offensive. I mean, we're not impatient. I mean, it's not the health and well-being of American lives are being bought and sold as commodities.
Mm-hmm.
We're desperate, and Obama spoke to our desperation. We're losing homes, jobs, and our retirements are disappearing into thin air. You know, I mean, we're being affected directly and on a daily basis. You know, we're being scammed by the healthcare industry, the mortgage industry, the banking industry. We're being told to be ashamed to even think that we're entitled to healthcare and regulations on the corporatocracies, you know. So I don't know if any party's patient. I think it would be the liberals, at least compared to the Republicans.
Calva, who do you feel is telling you that you should be patient, or I'm sorry, that you should be ashamed for wanting health care? Where are you getting that message from?
Well, I've heard one of the talking points of the Republicans saying that it's an entitlement program. You know, we're not supposed to feel entitled to health care. You know, like all of us are not entitled to basic health care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, like we're supposed to be ashamed, you know, for thinking we're entitled to health care. You know, we're actually supposed to be
satisfied
with...
Because they don't appreciate the fact that health care is a human right. They just don't get it. It's not on their radar. If it is on their radar, they don't give a damn about it. But, you know, one of the problems, Calvo, is that in this case, it's not the Republicans who scuttled decent health care reform, health care insurance reform. It was the Democrats. The Democrats went in negotiating with themselves. Barack Obama never, put his cards on the table to say, look, you guys figure this out, but I want this and this and this, and I want it on my desk by the end of the year. He didn't go in there and do that, and I think I think I agree with what you're saying, that liberals, progressive Democrats have every right to yell and scream, and frankly, I would suggest we have a duty to do so.
Right, exactly.
All right. I do appreciate your call, Calvo. You staying warm up there in Minnesota?
Oh, it's kind of cold today, but, you know, we do our best.
You guys are used to it, right?
Yeah, we're used to it.
Yeah, I know. Down here in Dallas, not so used to it. Drove into town. It was like an ice rink. I've never seen anything like it. I do appreciate the call, Calvo. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said that Frank Schaefer had written one of the most controversial articles ever at Brad Blog, and it was because he criticized the left. He criticized those who were criticizing Obama. And in my opinion, rightfully so. They need to criticize him. He needs criticism. But, you know, it's getting tough out there because there is not a lot of rational radio in this country. It is crazy. It is nuts out there. And it's, you know, very difficult to tell the difference. And we've got this mentality that, either you're with us 100% or you're as bad as Bush. You're with them. No, people, that's not the case. You can be against Obama's policies without being against Obama. You can call to kill the health bill not because you're an evil Republican, but because you think it's not enough and you think that we'll get something better if we don't accept this. Now, you might disagree with that opinion, but it's a perfectly legitimate opinion. And we've gotten to this point in this, give the number, 800-277-1637. Extension 703, that's 800-277-1637, extension 703. We've gotten to the point in this country where we can't have a disagreement anymore. We've got to learn how to disagree without calling the other guy a terrorist. Unless, of course, they are a terrorist. Unless, of course, they are a, you know, crazy Republican Jesus loving America hater. Yeah, we got a lot of those. And we're trying to find, you know, we played the music Stuck in the Middle with You because I've been trying to find at Brad Blog a way to have a discussion, a real discussion about the real issues that we really have in this country. And that discussion is a criticism of Obama and a support of Obama. It's not this phony right, left, red, blue, conservative, liberal, Democratic, Republican nonsense that is flogged on the media day in, day out. It's a phony debate, people. There's a real debate to be had, and we need to have it. And we're trying to have it, some of us, a few of us, who aren't interested in playing that game. Well, if you want to have it with us, give us a call, 800-277-1637. I'm going to take a quick break here, come back with Duncan in Reading, and much more right ahead. Brad in for Malloy.
But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Yeah. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Delighted to be here, broadcasting live, at least through Wednesday, here from Dallas, Texas, Big D. AM 1360 Rational Radio, where they may or may not be on the air in the future. They will be on the internets and maybe on the TV, but I'd like them to stay on the public airwaves. But what do I know? Hey, my thanks tonight, before we're going to get to Duncan in a second and some other callers, my thanks tonight to my buddy Tony Sorrentino out at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. You rock out there, brother. Thanks for getting us out to the world, coast to coast and around the globe. Sean Compton here in Dallas and David Clifton of Rational Radio/Broadcasting. Sean, I'm enjoying this. Thanks for Thanks for having me here this week.
Hey, it's all about you, Brad.
Thank you for knowing that, too. Producer Desi Doyen, thank you, girlfriend. Agent 99 over at bradblog.com, thank you. Of course, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in while they have fun and relax. And a reminder for those listening on MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid shortly after the program. Speaking of Agent 99 over in the chat room, she says, call Brad and point out that calling Republicans Nazis and then griping about us not being able to argue is BS. I changed the word to BS there, yeah. Well, you know, I called the Republicans Nazi, a Republican today over at Bradblog a Nazi, because he was a Nazi. He had an SS tattoo on the side of his neck and a Republican Party banner, a bumper sticker on the back of his pickup truck. And his name was Bubba. I think that was him, or was that the other Republican Nazi up in Virginia who held them? Anyway, let's just get over here to Duncan in Redding, California. I think that's is that Sparky Dunk from the chat room, Duncan?
Yes, it is, Brad.
Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. How are you?
Oh, just fine. I just wanted to comment on your video, the Rise of the Teabaggers on the website.
Yes, sir.
I've watched it several times. I enjoyed it, really.
Thank you.
Tim from L.A.
Yeah.
doesn't like it, but he didn't think there was that many people that dumb in L.A.
who didn't like it? And now, for folks who don't know, go over to Brad Blog or to YouTube, search Rise of the Teabags, and you'll see the visit that we had with the Teabaggers when they were kicking off their new national tour a month or two ago. Desi and I went out there with a video camera and talked to all of our Teabag friends. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I think you'll enjoy it, like Duncan. But who didn't like it? Tim in L.A.? Duncan?
Tim from L.A.
He said that over on the Brad on the chat room there? He didn't like it?
Well, he didn't like the fact that there was that many teabaggers in L.A.
In L.A., yeah, I know.
Yeah. I live in Northern California, yeah. So I'm in teabagger land.
Yeah, I know.
Come February, Sarah Palin is coming to the logging convention here in Redding.
Yeah, she'll cancel. She never shows up anywhere, Duncan. Remember, she canceled. She won't be there.
Well,
we'll see.
This is teabagger land in Northern California, remember.
We're all in teabagger land, my friend. Hey, Duncan, I got to get to, get out. Thanks, I appreciate the call, and thanks for chatting over in the chat room. All right, let's get over to, real quickly, James in El Sobrante, California. Did I say that right, James?
You sure did.
Thank you. With a flourish. You got about 30 seconds. Tell me what's on your mind.
Was thinking, it's not this healthcare bill is not such a bad thing. Everybody has to have health insurance. There's people out there that need jobs. People can get jobs as personal trainers.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to get a health insurance plan that has action plans, steps for healthy living, and people are going to have to check up in on you from time to time to make sure that you're following along with your plans. I might be knocking on your door and seeing if you're ready to go for your weekly jog at 5:30 in the morning.
Well, I don't understand can you explain this? What the hell you're talking about, James? In 10 seconds?
A lot of people out there with diabetes and so forth, we need to make sure that they're physically and mentally healthy. So we're going to have people that work through the insurance company's plans to check upon our people and make sure that they're living in a healthy lifestyle.
I think you're
a good thing for America.
I think you're being sardonic, but I do appreciate. No, okay, I do appreciate your sardonicnessery. Thanks, James. I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate all of you folks out there for listening. We will be back tomorrow night with another thrilling episode of the Mike Malloy Program. I'm Brad Friedman. Until then, check us out at bradblog.com. Follow us on Twitter at thebradblog.com. Till tomorrow night, America, keep it lit.